This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. California wildfires. I'm Sherry Preston. We have just learned that the wildfires burning throughout Los Angeles have claimed at least two lives. Los Angeles County Supervisor Catherine Barger minutes ago.
This is a dynamic situation. We've got fires throughout the entire county, which are spreading our resources very short. One of the things that people ask me is, what do you want to convey to the public? And that is, heed the advice of first responders. When they ask you to evacuate, evacuate.
Fire Chief Anthony Baroni says 1,000 structures have burned so far and they don't know how it started.
The cause of the fire is unknown. However, it is under investigation.
ABC's Leanne Suter is on the scene of the Altadena fire north of Los Angeles.
It sounds like a freight train is coming through the trees here. Like, here comes another one. You can hear it kind of building as it starts. And then these winds really hit hard, these gusts. And that is the problem for all of these firefighters.
This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. On the agenda for the La Crosse City Council on Thursday, a resolution seeking state and federal aid to help deal with homelessness in La Crosse. The six-part request would be sent to the governor, state legislature, Congress, and federal agencies. The council will also take up two projects that would redevelop Grandview Hospital and South Library into housing. Other items include several property rezoning requests, adding annex properties to voting wards, and a few clerical changes to city ordinances. There will be four candidates for La Crosse mayor this year, all seeking to replace Mitch Reynolds, who declined to run again. Christine Kahlo, Vicky Markison, Ellie McLoon, and Shondell Washington Spivey all filed their paperwork in time to appear on the ballot. There will be a primary on February 18th to narrow the field down to two candidates. There will also be a primary for City Council District 7, currently held by Matt Keel, who faces challenges from Gary Podesky and John Ryman. In addition to La Crosse's municipal elections, Onalaska will have a contested election for District 1 alderperson, as Jim Benash faces Tom Smith for the seat vacated by Sean McAllister. Only one candidate, Kathleen Lowendorf, is running to replace Dan Stevens in District 2. District 3's Stephen Knott is running unopposed. For Circuit Court, Elliot Levine and Scott Horn are running unopposed in Branches 2 and 4, while Joe Veenstra and Eric Sanford are competing for the Branch 1 seat vacated by Ramona Gonzalez. Five school referendums statewide are approved for the February 18th primary. In West Central Wisconsin, just one district is seeking a referendum. Mauston School District voters will once again decide on whether to allow the district to exceed the revenue limit for the next 4 years to pay for operational expenses. District administrators said that without the referendum funding, the school district could dissolve within the next few years. The filing deadline for referendums on the April 1st ballot is later this month. Currently, 20 referendums have been filed for that election, including Melrose Mindoro and Cochrane Fountain City. You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.us/app. I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
Marquette wins again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Marquette Golden Eagles with a comeback win in Milwaukee over the Georgetown Hoyas. Final score 74-66. Head coach Shaka Smart.
We get down 14. We're not shooting the ball well. The zone stymied us to some extent. It would have been easy for us to get bummed out. And I thought our guys did a great job collecting each other, helping each other. Have the spirit that we needed to have to win the game.
NBA, the Bucks host the San Antonio Spurs tonight at Five Sir Forum. Former Marquette star Jimmy Butler says he wants out of Miami, but doesn't want the Heat to trade him to Milwaukee. NFL wildcard playoffs this weekend, the Packers and the Eagles Sunday at 3:30. Matt LaFleur on one of the things that stands out about Philadelphia.
I just feel like the defense is, I mean, they're humming right now. It's a very talented defense. You can tell that they've got everybody on the same page. They got superstars on every level of the defense.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Mostly sunny and crisp today, with high temperatures tapping 20 and sliding to near 10 tonight. It'll be a mostly cloudy start to the day tomorrow, but a warmer one, with highs reaching the mid-20s and snow moving in by the afternoon. And accumulations look light, with less than half an inch. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 13 degrees at our studios.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain.
Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
Thursday will preview the nation's final farewell to former President Carter as his state funeral moves from the Capitol to the National Cathedral to Plains, Georgia.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Alba Show.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up later on this hour after the 11:30 news, how young is too young to get a tattoo? This is related to a story out of Arizona that's causing some controversy. How young is too young to get a tattoo? That will come your way after the 11:30 news. We will wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Baby Don't Drive My Car edition. Stick around for that. Right now, though, he is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Darren Von Ruden is here. Good morning, Darren. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Jane.
Good to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us. Darren, we've had you on a couple of times, and I don't know that we've ever started with, what is it that the Wisconsin Farmers Union does? Let's start there.
Sure. So we're a general farm organization, so we do a lot of educational work to our members from all the way starting at age 7, all the way up to as old as I am and older. So our youth group, we do have a camp and teach the cooperative principles there. And then for older adults, certainly looking at anything to do with farming. And then also we do quite a bit of lobbying too here in the state of Wisconsin and in D.C. on agricultural issues.
And what is your personal background, Darren?
I am an organic dairy farmer.
Nice. When I was looking at the Wisconsin Farmers Union website, it almost looks like a congressional map where it's busted into 8 different
districts,
and everyone has their representative. And Darren, you are the president, Mr. President. Congratulations on your reelection. And yes, Jane said, I was looking through, I'm like, I don't think we've ever asked Darren what you guys do exactly. And I'm glad you did, because I think that's very important. We love talking to farmers here, and we love knowing that, especially in the day of 2024 with all these devices and all these things going on, you're still teaching the youth how to farm and getting them interested in keeping those traditions alive on those sometimes 100-year-old family properties.
Yeah. Yeah. And, or 150-year-old.
Yeah,
properties.
Exactly.
We do have some members that are 6th, 7th generation farmers already. And yeah,
I would imagine that in the youth groups that you have now, things have changed, as Greg kind of implied. Things have changed so much. There's so much more technology involved in farming than there ever used to be.
Yeah, certainly is, you know, just from my generation to my son now, and the amount of stuff that he does on the computer and looking at the equipment that's out there, if you can afford it, which not everybody can afford it, you know, you don't have to drive tractors once in a while. All you got to do is turn them around on that end of the fields, and, you know, getting to that ease of operating things is, you know, I never thought it'd happen in my lifetime, but it certainly is here already. But yeah, you know, our kids that are 6, 7, 8 years old right now are probably going to certainly see a different type of technology than what's on the farms today, too.
Is that something that your son wants to do? Does he want to continue the tradition?
Yep. He's continuing with the 50-cow dairy operation. And, you know, foresees that staying there. Certainly, you know, equipment updates need to happen because eventually some of that equipment isn't replaceable or there's not parts available for it. So you got to continue that process as the generations move on.
Well, and I think too, Darren, I think there is a misconception that all farms now are big corporate factory farms. And granted, the number of small independent farms has been shrinking, and that's been shrinking for, what, the last 20 years. But there are still independent farmers in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, looking at the dairy industry, which is the, you know, the agriculture's biggest partner in the state, we're down under 6,000 dairy farms today versus back in the 80s, we had 40,000 dairy farms.
Wow.
So, you know, we've seen, you know, continuous drop there. And it's not, you know, our members' viewpoints isn't going the right direction. You know, we need to see diversity within our production system, and certainly the direction that we're heading with fewer and fewer owners of the agricultural farms, whether it's dairy or crops or livestock, you know, it's getting to be too concentrated. And that really, you know, draws some, well, we need to draw more attention to that issue, because that having our food systems coming from many owners versus one or two is critical to make sure that we have a strong government here.
Yeah, monopolies tend to only be good for the monopolies.
Yep.
Well, where are things now? So what are you hearing from folks? We're going to be going into a second Trump administration. Donald Trump, of course, famously promised on the campaign trail mass deportations on day one and 25% or more tariffs on all kinds of our trading partners. What are you hearing from folks?
Well, you know, certainly the uncertainty of what is going to happen has got a lot of people worried about what January 22nd is going to look like, because January 21 will be that day when things do happen, if they do. You know, certainly looking at the dairy industry here in the state, pretty close to 70% of all the milk that's produced in the state right now is done with immigrant labor. So what happens if that mass deportation happens? You know, how are those families going to really be affected? And that's the immigrant families, but also the families that own those operations that might have employees that don't show up for work because they're going to be afraid to go. And, you know, how are they going to be able to replace those workers? That's probably the biggest concern. But, you know, certainly looking at the tariff issues, we're still suffering from that yet today, because from his first presidency, because we're not seeing those markets that have been lost overseas. Other countries and other organizations have filled in for us. So we don't have that ability to get back into them right away. And now with another threat, certainly is going to mean more loss of customers across the ponds.
What markets were lost in the first administration? And if this happens further, I'll say if. Do you foresee other markets that will possibly be lost as well, so it's even a widening chasm of the things you can't provide to the world?
Yes, you know, certainly looking at China as a bigger market, they're number three in agricultural production, or they're number three buyer of agricultural production in this country. Mexico's number one, Canada's number two, China's number three. And so looking at that market that we lost, and most of that is coming out of South America now going to China, but the 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada right now, and we're seeing what's happening in Canada with Prime Minister Trudeau stepping down now because of pressure there. But, you know, those markets are not going to come back overnight, because it's like anything. If you have, you go and buy a car and you don't like the car, you don't necessarily go back to that same dealership.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next time. So, you know, how can we mend those wounds? It's not something that happens overnight. So this is going to affect us for maybe up to the next decade.
And you mentioned, you said the top three were China, Mexico, and Canada, and those are the ones he has been mentioning more than anyone else. And I don't want to say, I'm not going to give him the strategic award of saying, I want to go after the countries that affect our farmers the most, but that's what's going to happen now, is that the top three buyers are the top three he wants to tariff more, and it just seems like you are all going to be left in the wake.
Yeah, because agriculture has always been the first one that retaliation happens against, and because we're the easiest target. And so that's just going to continue that process. And, you know, it's been so frustrating talking to not only our own members, but other farmers across the state and the country on, you know, what happens if, you know, and nobody can really answer that question because, you know, we don't know what that if looks like at this point in time. And, you know, the grave concern is, you know, if it does happen, what does things look like come February, March, April, after the effects of all that happens? Because certainly looking at pretty much all of agriculture and many other industries, immigrant labor has become a bigger part of that, all the way from roofing companies to hotel workers to, you know, processing factories, whether it's for meat and poultry or milk, or even you're looking at your equipment dealers.
If you're just joining us, Darren Von Ruden is our guest. He's the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and just talking about the incoming administration has promised massive tariffs against some of our trading partners, has also promised mass deportations on day one. Darren, it's not like using immigrant labor, farmers using immigrant labor is a new thing within the last 10 years. This has been going on for years and years and years.
Yeah, you know, it really started back in the 70s and 80s when farms started getting bigger and bigger. That's when the immigrant labor became a bigger part of it. But then as Americans don't want to do those dirty jobs that agriculture has quite a few of them in, we've become more and more dependent on immigrant labor to fill that workforce. And so if we want to get rid of the immigrants, then, you know, Americans need to realize that we need to do that dirty work that nobody else wants to do.
And I know this is a heavy duty speculation, but I'm positive you haven't been asked this. You have been asked this before. Let's just say on day one, within the first month of Trump's first month in office, they get rid of them. Let's say magically just pull them all away. They're all sent back to the countries from where they came from. What does that do to you?
Yeah, so, you know, certainly on our farm, we do all the work ourselves. And so we're not going to be directly impacted by it on our farm. But, you know, our neighbors that are 3-4 miles away that have 2,500 cows and have 15 or to 20 immigrant laborers there, you know, there just isn't the workforce in the area to fill. Even if half of them left, the workforce just isn't there. So how does that operation stay in business? How do those cows get fed? How do they get milked? How do you get the cleaning done? You know, it's going to mean that fewer people are going to have to do a lot more work. And you can only do that for a certain amount of time. So, you know, a month down the road, if that is the case, are the American people going to stand up and help with that process of making sure that their food is produced?
And what is that going to do to prices? Donald Trump promised to lower the price of eggs. He was going to lower the price of groceries. Oops. And then he said, well, you know, once prices are up, it's kind of hard to get them back down. We're going to continue our conversation with Darren Von Ruden. And from Chippewa Falls, I see you on the line. We'll take you when we get back. Stay with us. You were listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Eagle 1490 AM. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has
it? No, not at all.
In the Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again? Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when.
don't find yourself saying,
"When the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out."
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I drew my brother's name one year and we went to the mall and I said, "Hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later." So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, "Merry Christmas. Love, Pete." And that was my gift to him that I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, "You are the laziest, cheapest." It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
The first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on a live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. The president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Darren Von Rudin, is here, and you're going to be making a monthly appearance with us on Matinair on Air. Very excited about that, Darren. Before we went to the break, we were talking about Donald Trump's promise of mass deportations on day one and also increased tariffs against China and Mexico and Canada, our biggest trading partners. And we were going to get to prices and what that's going to mean for prices in the grocery store should all that happen. I did want to take Ann from Chippewa Falls, though, who's been waiting very patiently. Good morning, Ann. Thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
Good morning. I just want to thank Darren for coming on. I'm a big fan of small farmers, organic farmers. We actually buy meat from an organic farmer. But I don't think the farmers are on the same page. Our organic farmer said, you know, it's costing him a lot of money. And the farmer next door to him said, "Oh, don't worry. You'll get a check from the government." And this is what's going on. And most of the Wisconsin farmers voted for Trump, and they knew all these things. So I'm confused about that. So if Darren can clear that up and make me happier about the farmers, that'd be great.
No pressure, Darren. Thank you, Ann. Appreciate the call, and thank you for listening. Yes, explain everyone to us, Darren, please, in 2 minutes or less.
By the way, also, my muffler needs to be fixed. Can you take care of that too, Darren? Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for the question, Ann. And I am as confused as you are, too, Ann. It just seems like there isn't that connection between what's going on in reality and what's happening on farms. You know, we've got our members really want to see our income coming from the marketplace. And, you know, you're certainly helping with that, buying organic products and trying to keep as local as you possibly can. That certainly helps, but then in the reality is you just wonder how the checks from 2018 and 2019 that went out to farmers because of the trade wars that we had. You know, talked to a farmer up in the Chippewa Falls area here back before the election. Somehow he forgot about a $400,000 check from the government for the what he needed to recover from his market losses that came. And you know, I just question how you lose track of $400,000. And you know, but that's the mentality that we're at now. It's either get big or get out, and too many farmers are stuck in that spot that, you know, they want to stay in business, so they expand and continue that process, and you know, and then just really lose touch with what reality looks like and making sure that we have that diverse system that we've been talking about at Wisconsin Farmers Union.
And to back up a little bit, Darren, for people who don't realize, when Donald Trump instituted those tariffs, during his first administration, our farmers took a huge hit. And they took such a big hit that Donald Trump had to help subsidize farmers, correct?
Yep. And, you know, and that's part of the farm bill process that we're still kind of in the middle of. It was supposed to be replaced here a little over a year and a half ago now. Now we've got another extension to the end of September this year. And, you know, that really needs to be reformed, too. We continue to give single individuals, you know, four, five, six, even $750,000 is supposed to be the limit. But they've figured out that loophole, too, to just divide the farm up amongst more family members and get larger amounts from the federal government. And, you know, we don't feel that that's right. You know, we want to see our income coming from the marketplace. And this mechanism isn't working. And originally it was set up to protect farmers. Now it's actually putting, you know, millions of dollars into single individuals' hands.
There's always a way to game the system, man. It just seems like there, if you can figure it out, there's a way to game the system. In the time we have left, Darren, I do want to talk about prices. Donald Trump, of course, used that as a big talking point on the campaign trail. He was going to bring down grocery prices as soon as he gets into office. And then when he got elected and he was asked about it, he said, well, you know, once grocery prices are high, they're really hard to bring back down. If he goes through with these tariffs and these mass deportations, what's going to happen to the price of eggs and milk and butter?
Yeah, you know, certainly looking at the mass deportation is probably going to affect it more because the processing industry and even the production facilities at the farm level, you lose all those employees that we could possibly lose. You're going to see mass interruptions within the processing industry and all the way up to the food stores. And that always spells higher prices. You know, just look at what happened during the pandemic. Yes. And how, you know, facilities were shut down, couldn't get meat processed. Farmers ended up euthanizing animals because they just didn't have any place to take them to get processed. And so if that happens again with the mass deportation, we're going to see the spring of 2021 and the spring of 2025.
I know, it's just, it's terrifying. It is, and it's got to be, business hates unknowns, and I'm sure farmers hate unknowns even more than more traditional businesses do.
Yeah, you know, we deal with the uncertainty of the weather on a daily basis, so, you know, we kind of know what's going to happen tomorrow, but you don't always know what's going to happen, so, you know, this is just adding a second layer of uncertainty to our businesses and really looking at, you know, the next generation. Why would any farmer want to encourage that next generation to come into agriculture with all the uncertainty that we have today?
I was going to say, honestly, you deal with the weather, but honestly, the weather seems more predictable than the government right now for you as a farmer, though.
Yeah, it does. And certainly with the farm bill in such a flux and not having any certainty where that's going to be at 9 months again, you know, yeah, how do you plan? You know, that's one thing nice about the organic industry. We do have a few things in place that allow farmers to really budget for the next year so that we know what we're going to do if we can hit our production goals. That price is there and the consumer is willing to pay that price for that product. So, you know, there's little certainty there, but certainly on the conventional side and general agriculture, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty right now because that farm bill is still up in the air.
I'm sure you have another real cozy meeting set up with Derek Van Orden where he's going to just welcome you into his office so you can sit down and share your concerns. Darren Van Orden has been our guest, the president of the Wisconsin.
Darren Van Rooden.
Jeez, I'm sorry. Darren Van Rooden, the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union president. Maybe if you were relatives, he would sit down and have a meeting with you. Thank you so much, Darren. We'll see you next month. We have news. Thanks. Coming up next, stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Be just like them. They say, sing while you save, and I just get bored. I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more.
This is the talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Wisconsin State Legislature was sworn in this week, and the party lines look a little different. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
Six new state senators and 31 new state representatives were sworn in as Wisconsin lawmakers during the opening session of the 2025-26 Wisconsin State Legislature. The Senate has 18 Republicans and 15 Democrats, and the Assembly has 54 Republicans and 45 Democrats. While Republicans still hold the majority, the margin is much closer than it's been in decades, meaning more bipartisan cooperation may be seen this session than in previous ones.
Republicans in the state legislature are working to pass a resolution that would add a statewide referendum to the ballots this spring, seeking to make voter ID laws permanent in the state of Wisconsin, fearing that the Wisconsin Supreme Court could overturn those voter ID laws. La Crosse will have two municipal primaries on February 18th, while five of the eight elections for city council will be contested. First, on February 18th, there will be a primary for La Crosse mayor, which will narrow the field from four candidates down to two. There will also be a primary for City Council District 7, with three candidates vying for that seat. Other contested elections for April in the city include City Council Districts 9, 11, 12, and 13. The spring election will be held on April 1st. In addition to La Crosse's municipal elections, Onalaska will have a contested election for District 1 alderperson, as Jim Benash faces Tom Smith for the seat vacated by Sean McAllister. Only one candidate, Kathleen Lowendorf, is running to replace Dan Stevens in District 2. District 3's Stephen Knott is running unopposed. For Circuit Court, Elliot Levine and Scott Horn are running unopposed in Branches 2 and 4, while Joe Veenstra and Eric Sanford are competing for the Branch 1 seat vacated by Ramona Gonzalez. You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.com/app. From the Civic Media Newsroom in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Golden Globes kicked off award season Sunday night. It was good news for the entertainment world as ratings were up across the board, including broadcast TV, social media, and streaming, despite the fact that the Globes were up against Sunday Night Football. Network TV reported that ratings were up 50% from the broadcast in 2023. The ceremony also produced 40 million social media impressions, which were more than the 2024 Oscars and Grammys had combined. Streaming ratings were up 9%. Post Malone performed with Beyonce during the NFL halftime show on Christmas Day in Houston. The night before, he was hanging at a bar called the Rail Yard with Shaboozy. That was a fun sentence to say. Malone met bartender Renee Brown, a single mom upset that she was working Christmas Eve for the first time instead of home making cookies and watching Christmas movies with her 9-year-old daughter. Her night picked up when Malone left her a $20,000 tip. Being more than 15% is so gauche. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mostly sunny and crisp today, with high temperatures tapping 20 and sliding to near 10 tonight. It'll be a mostly cloudy start to the day tomorrow, but a warmer one, with highs reaching the mid-20s and snow moving in by the afternoon. And accumulations look light with less than half an inch. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 15 degrees.
The Todd Alba Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates. You see how simple that is? There's a vote, you certify the results, democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win, but that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Earl Ingram.
The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
That's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. Those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. They're adding to the national debt.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
Next time, Matt Rothschild will be my guest. Meta ends fact-checking, and is a NATO ally really a NATO ally if our president-elect threatens them with force? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Good
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Don't forget, if you would like to help support Civic Media and you're looking for some, I don't know, new hat, maybe a new t-shirt, go to our website, civicmedia.us. Click on the shop button.
Yes.
Upper right-hand corner. And pick up a t-shirt. Maybe pick up a baseball cap. Take a look. Support Civic Media.
I really think we should have a t-shirt that has all three of our faces that are like drawn cartoon-like. And just says Matt and Aaron Air underneath with little clouds on each side. I really want that to happen.
Okay, well, get on that. We might have hats.
We may or may not have hats.
We that may is, or may not have hats.
That is up in the air. Matt and Aaron
there. There's a rumor that on Monday we might have some special hats available.
No, that's not a rumor at that point. I'm sorry.
It's a rumor. I'm sorry. There's a rumor.
I'm so sorry.
So join us on Monday to find out if we actually have some Matt and Aaron on Air related merch coming your way. I'm very curious how you guys feel about this. 855-752-4842. Headline reads, 9-year-old girl gets permanent tattoo of American flag. How young is too young to get a tattoo? 9-year-old girl brought to Arizona by her parents because Arizona apparently has very loose regulations regarding tattoo artists.
Shocking.
They don't have to be licensed. That's a whole nother discussion.
Wisconsin almost went through the same thing when it came to barbers. They wanted to severely gut the regulations on the safety and sanitation requirements for barbers to learn and to adhere to.
And you are a barber.
I am a barber. I am a licensed, trained, licensed barber. And Wisconsin has some of the strictest in when it comes to safety and sanitation. And they wanted to get rid of that because they said it hampered the ability for people to start their own businesses, when really it was a major corporation who said, hey, change the law so we can skirt your little regulations and do things our way. People get sick. There are outbreaks. There are stories, and I'm not going to get into them right now, but being licensed, especially in something like tattooing, if you're not licensed, I'm not even going into that. That is disgusting to me.
Yeah, that would be the last place. And I'm not a tattoo fan. I will never get a tattoo. That's just not my thing. You have numerous tattoos. Lots of people have tattoos.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine going into some place that is not licensed, where they're going to take a needle and punch into your skin. They might not even clean those needles. You don't know.
Well, and that's the thing is when you nowadays go to get a tattoo, I've been getting tattoos now for, oh my God.
How old were you when you got your first one?
It was August of 1997. No, six, five, five.
And how six. Old? How old were you?
I was 18.
You were 18.
I was 18. And at the time, I'm old. Tattooing was still illegal in Milwaukee.
Really?
It wasn't for another like a year or so. They would finally legalize tattooing in Milwaukee. We had to go all the way. And I lived in Waukesha, so it wasn't a big deal. I had to go all the way to Maguanago to get my tattoo because it was legal there. But I remember even before that, they're like watching programs where they talk about tattooing. Make sure, you know, you're walking into a clean environment.
Yes.
You're walking into an environment where the tattoo artist will show you what they're doing, give you a complete rundown of what they're doing, show you their tools. And I know, from then to now, things have very much changed as far as the equipment. Like before, like they would use what's called an autoclave. They would put certain non-disposable instruments in this machine that would essentially sanitize the instruments, okay. So they could be reused. They were medically sanitized,
right?
So they could be reused,
right?
Now, with the exception of the gun that they have in their hand, which is now looks actually like a cucumber. Because they're wireless, they're Bluetooth. everything is packaged and disposable. You know, like if they're going to use a needle.
One needle and then it's gone.
It's gone. So it's so safe and so reliable if you're going to the right place. And in Wisconsin, as far as I know, you have to be licensed to open up a shop.
How young is too young to get a tattoo? 855-752-4842. Talking about the story out of Arizona. Instagram video posted by a tattoo artist shows a 9-year-old getting a tattoo of an American flag. She came in with her parents. Mm-hmm. The artist explained the girl originally wanted a tattoo of Donald Trump on her neck. She's 9. He convinced her to do what he called a more patriotic tattoo, convinced her to get an American flag tattoo on her arm. She came back for a touch-up on her American flag. She did change her mind about wanting Donald Trump tattooed on her neck. But this has sparked a big debate online about people who are criticizing the tattoo shop for doing this. She came in with her parents.
Yeah.
They gave permission.
And the tattoo artist has every right to say no.
Sure.
There are tattooed artists who will say, I won't tattoo genitalia areas. I won't tattoo feet. I won't tattoo this. I won't tattoo that, because their own reasons. And that's it. If you walk in and you're a tattoo artist, Jane, and I say, tattoo my neck, and you say, I don't do necks, I can't force you to do it.
Go find somebody else.
Go find somebody else who says yes. This guy said yes because the parents said, we give permission. I think it's too young and wallopingly too stupid. This is a stupid tattoo.
Ben Shaw with the Alliance of Professional Tattooists said Arizona is one of the least regulated states for tattoo artists. No license is required. He says it's one of the most frustrating things about our career field in Arizona with no regulations. He also said just because something is legal doesn't mean it's ethical. It gives us professionals a bad reputation. If you see a 10-year-old with a professional tattoo and they say they got it at a tattoo shop, this degrades us as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
How young is too young to get a tattoo? 855-752-4842. Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line. Good morning, Mark. What do you think about this?
She's about half the age that she should be for it to be legal to get a tattoo, because a tattoo is at least semi-permanent. I mean, and the parents should have their head examined for getting this. I couldn't help remembering the line that from the old National Lampoon, it's a different context, but infectious hepatitis was all that came to stay. I mean, that because, as you pointed out, the whole thing for licensing, I've had this discussion frequently with barbers that, because I'd never get a tattoo, but that you have to be licensed to get that kind of thing. Because, like, barbers, I mean, and hairdressers, they're handling dangerous equipment that is, and dangerous chemicals that are applied to people's bodies, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just asinine that they're pushing through this deregulation of this kind of industry. And for a 9-year-old wanting to get a tattoo of Donald Trump on her neck, she got that from her parents. A 9-year-old doesn't dream this stuff up on her own. I mean, she hears that in the house, how great and, you know, worshipful Donald Trump is. And, and biblically, at least, that's at least in the Old Testament, you're not supposed to be getting tattoos anyway.
Oh, Mark, they don't count that one. They don't count the tattoo one or the eating pork one or the whole shrimp thing. The only thing they care about from Leviticus is the stuff they get to cherry pick. But I understand where you're going with that. Thank you. I agree with you. I think it's... Do parents never say no to their kids anymore?
Some don't.
It's like, you're 9, I want a tattoo of Trump on my neck. Okay, honey, let's go.
That's pretty.
Are you kidding?
I guarantee you they didn't say, that's okay, honey. They said, that's pretty cool, man.
You're my progeny. I'm so proud of you.
I mean, it's a perfect example. Is a long time ago when I had my first tattoo, which is on my right arm. I only had one at the time. It was sticking out a little from my sleeve, and I was dating a young lady who was a born-again Christian, as her parents were. Her mother saw the little bit of tattoo on my arm, and she got up. I didn't know what was going on. She shot up. She walked in the bedroom. She pulled out a Bible.
Oh, my God.
Put it in front of me and pointed out to the Old Testament passage that Mark was talking about. And I said, well, what about your husband? He has a topless mermaid tattooed on his arm. And she looked at me, and I kid you not, Jane, she goes, he is saved.
Oh, so it's special dispensation.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. So that explains a lot.
But going back to what we're saying is, like, you know, honestly, like, I have to, I don't want to say excuse the tattoo artist. Obviously, they're not the most ethical person in the world if they're going to tattoo a 9-year-old.
But at least he talked her out of the neck tattoo.
But they could honestly say no, too. That's right.
But she's just going to go someplace else.
Well, and also, I mean, who knows? In 2 years, she might just get it removed as well because whatever. I mean, tattoos are not permanent anymore. But I will say this. Tattoo removal from people I've talked to who've gotten it has said it's 10 times more painful than the tattoo itself.
And very expensive.
Yeah. And there, I mean, I have about 17 tattoos on my body. I don't regret any of them. Some of them are like, they're fine.
Yeah.
You know, they're
not my fave.
They're of a day and age, but definitely never like, you know, if I would have gotten a tattoo at 10, I'd have a tattoo on my arm right now that said 5-star general of the metal militia. First of all, militias have no generals. Second of all, I'm glad I did not get that tattoo at 10 years old. And I'm glad my parents would never have entertained the idea as my father hated tattoos.
Dave from New Berlin texting in, that flag is going to look awful as the kid grows up. Probably a MAGA mom approved of it. I think 18 should be the cutoff.
Yeah.
Someone listening in Green Bay on WGBW, as someone who has several tattoos, I think you should be at least 18. Tom from Jackson says 21. Todd from De Pere, wonder what would have happened if that 9-year-old girl told her parents she wanted to identify as he, him. that would have been honored too, huh? Yeah, I probably know.
What if she wanted to just get like a comma and a la because she loves Kamala?
Yeah,
they would have thrown her tuchus out of the house.
Angie from Monroe is on the line. Good morning, Angie. Thank you for joining us. How young is too young to get a tattoo?
Well, that is definitely too young. I just want to make a statement that Wisconsin, and if you have your parents with you, you can serve a minor alcohol,
yes,
no matter how young they are.
Yes.
I will say that as, I mean, just to stab that alcohol thing in the gut. And then my other half is actually a tattoo artist, so I'm all for tattoos, obviously.
Sure.
I'm not against it, but that is so far wrong. And I wonder if when she ends up, you know, getting pregnant nice and young, and she needs that abortion to save her life, if that's going to be allowed to.
Good point, Angie.
Those are all definitely, if you're getting I don't know who said it, but this is a reflection of your parents' politics. No nine-year-old wants to tattoo a
politician.
I have an Obama tattoo on my back. I was nearly 30 when I got that one.
Yeah, I would have gotten a tattoo at 9 of Bobby Sherman.
Would have
been my choice.
What's interesting, though, is that law in Wisconsin that says that minors can drink with their children, or minors can drink with their parents.
With their parents.
That is enforceable on a case-by-case basis. We at the tap do not allow it. Like,
so just it's up to the business.
Correct. Yeah. It's not just a...
It's a blanket thing.
Yep, exactly.
Appreciate the call, Angie. Thank you very much. How young is too young to get a tattoo? 9-year-old girl with her parents went to Arizona. They're from out of state, by the way. Went to Arizona apparently because they are so loosely regulated in Arizona. She asked to get a tattoo of Donald Trump on her neck. The tattoo artist convinced her to get an American flag instead. She came back a year later for a few touch-ups and said she doesn't regret getting the flag.
Sure.
Which I guess that's good. That's too young.
It's too young.
That's too young.
It's too young. I think I think 18 is the age. You don't need to be older. You don't need to be younger than that. It's, you're an adult by ways of the law. That's when you can get a tattoo. I waited. I did that. I didn't get my ears pierced until I was 18, and my mother appreciated it. So
right.
I just
say no sometimes, mom and dad. You can say no.
Well, honestly, like if they're allowing their child to get a tattoo, they were going to allow her to get a neck tattoo, first of all. Let's not forget that.
At 9.
This was not them talking her down. That was the tattoo artist. But what else goes on in that house?
Well, she's getting a motorcycle next week. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. We have This Shouldn't Be a Thing coming up next. It's the Baby Don't Drive My Car edition. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Yeah, you need to worry about everything I've done. Live every second like it was my last one. Don't look back at a new direction. Don't look back at loved ones. Needed protection. No, no. You're still a part of everything I do. You're on my heart just like a tattoo. Can't waste time, so give it a moment. Can't waste time. Nothing's broken. No need to worry about everything I've done. Yeah.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Legislation unveiled Monday by the New Hampshire Senate would change the state's four presidential electoral votes from winner-take-all to proportional, based on which party wins its two congressional districts. Gerrymander the districts, and you guarantee more votes for your presidential candidate. Senate Bill 11 would have New Hampshire join Maine and Nebraska as the only states which have proportional electoral votes, and would apportion them based on which party wins Congressional District 1 or 2. In November, the state's congressional seats went to Democrats, Representative Chris Pappas and newcomer Maggie Goodlander, yet the state House, Senate, governorship, and governor's executive council all went red, in large part to gerrymandered voting districts. Gerrymandered, except the districts for Congress. A 2022 proposal by the New Hampshire House Election Law Committee radically gerrymandered the districts, guaranteeing the District 1 congressional seat for Republicans. So radical, in fact, that Republican governor and possible presidential candidate Chris Sununu surprised his own party by vetoing the map and proposing his own competitive map similar to that of previous decades. New Hampshire's incoming governor, former U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte, may not have such competitive compulsions. With a Republican House and Senate behind her, a gerrymandered congressional district could be a twofer for Republicans, both in New Hampshire and in the presidential race. I'm Brian Beal.
Here's to a Wisconsin winter you will always remember. To playing outdoors in a winter wonderland. Here's to cozying up around the fire and holding someone close. And to staying downtown, where the food scene makes your heart sing. And to celebrating moments frozen in time. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your winter getaway at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, and Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text. It's the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Jabba the Musk continues to actively ruin. Coming up tomorrow, Brittany Merlot will be here for a little weather and wine. Ooh. At 11:20. The cold is going to continue. We might have a little more snow coming in.
I think that's going to be up north.
Up north. Yeah. That's fine with me. Brittany will be here tomorrow at 11:20. Paul Noonan, the Acme Packing Company sports guru, will be here to talk all things sports and more.
Mm-hmm.
TBD.
He won't be talking about more.
No, but... yes, that's tomorrow. Friday, Jim Santel, our colleague here at Civic Media. He's host of Amicus, a law review Saturdays across Civic Media. He's brilliant. He's an attorney, former
U.S. attorney.
U.S. attorney. Yep. And we're going to talk about some of the, I have a profanity I would use instead of shenanigans.
I was going to say shenanigans.
Yeah, but some shenanigans going on in North Carolina. They had a Supreme Court election, and the Supreme Court is going to, it looks like they were going to step in and overturn this.
They're going to overturn the will of the people.
Yeah. So Jim Santel will be joining us on Friday at 10:30. I hope you can join us for that. Right now, though, it is 11:53. Calvin, that means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at Jane Says, JaneSays. Jane Says at civicmedia.us. Use that same email, too, if you ever want to get in contact with us. We do check our emails every day. Can be a guest maybe you think would be wonderful for the show, an issue going on in your community, no matter where you are across the state.
Yeah.
Please let us know. Go to Jane Says. Email Jane Says at civicmedia.us. Headline reads from TMJ4. Driverless robo-taxis set to hit the roads in U.S. cities in 2025. Zoox, a subsidiary of Amazon, says the carriage-style vehicles can fit four people inside and will soon be available to the general public as a ride-hailing service.
Spell Zooks, Jane.
Z-O-O-X.
You think Elon's going to get mad about that?
Oh. Rich guy. Fight.
Yeah.
Robotaxis made by Zooks are slated to hit the streets of L.A., San Francisco, and Foster City, California later on this year. The blue shuttles can fit four people inside. They don't have a driver's seat, steering wheel, or pedals. Zooks co-founder Jesse Levinson says it's symmetrical, it's bi-directional, it's really designed for a wonderful customer experience and a social seating arrangement on the inside. You use it the way you'd use a ride-hailing app, except you don't have to deal with a driver, and you get a safe and consistent experience, provided it doesn't crash into anything.
Here at Zooks, have you ever wanted to drive in a four-person casket with no driver? We are asking for it, Jane. We are asking for it. We are spitting in the face of God if you believe this. This is not right. I'm sorry. I am so deathly against driverless machines. We're asking for it.
They will continue to run safety tests.
Well, thank God.
Because last year, Zooks faced a federal investigation over rear-end crashes after some of their vehicles would brake suddenly. Developing autonomous vehicles and getting the tech to the point where it's safe enough to drive on public roads with no driver has taken Zooks and the industry many, many years. It's a challenging problem because the safety bar is so high. Yeah, it should be high.
They should really take this whole thing to Arizona. There's no rules there. No law.
Montana.
Montana, Idaho.
Either Dakota. Test him in Dakota.
I mean, my goodness. To live in Los Angeles must suck because you're always the pilot program. And this is terrible. There's going to be so many crashes.
Las Vegas resident Henry Suarez, he's excited to see robo-taxis on the strip. I don't think there will be any problems or anything. Another resident says, this makes me really uneasy. I don't like things I don't have control over. Zooks says it expects to roll this out later this year. Rides will initially be free for people who agree to test it out. You go first. You go.
Why is this called the guinea pig clause? I don't know. No way, no how, no anything whatsoever. I would never get into a driverless. No.
It's going to take a decade before I would get close to one of those things.
I don't even like when I get a check, I don't even like snap a picture of it to deposit it into my bank. You know that technology you can do that? I won't even do that. I'm not getting into a car without a driver. That's how old school I'm going to stay on this one. I will never, ever, ever, unless I'm unconscious and I have to. That's the only way I'll get into a driverless car.
And I guess my biggest sticking point about this is the name.
Zooks.
Should not be a thing. It just shouldn't.
It's not like someone got high and watched Grease and goes, guess what we're calling it?
Zooks is a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Not a driver. No, exactly. Not a waga waga.
Do you think when he's just driving, he's going, bop, 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 bop,
bop, bop. That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and texting and listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today, even if it's just a little bit, and you have a chance to share it. News coming up next, followed by Todd Alba. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will see you tomorrow.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for the Todd Alball Show.
Earl Ingram.
Join me on the next show. We'll talk about starting the new year off right with Omar the Pharmacist, and then we will talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion with attorney Roy Evans.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has
it? No, not at all.
The Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again? Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Soaring high above lacrosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX Lacrosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, California Wildfires. I'm Michelle Franzen. Fierce Santa Ana winds fueling four major fires in Los Angeles County. Authorities say since the outbreak yesterday, at least two people are dead, 70,000 residents under evacuation orders, and some 28,000 structures threatened. LA City Fire Chief Kristen Crowley.
We want to make sure that everybody understands we are absolutely not out of danger yet. With the strong winds that continue to push through the city and the county today, I would tell you, and we are all committed to our first responders, our firefighters will remain focused on protecting lives and property.
The fires, including the largest in the Pacific Palisades south of Malibu, has burned 5,000 acres in less than 24 hours and destroyed at least 1,000 homes and buildings. Still no containment. Fire crews are facing hurricane force winds throughout today, making it tougher to battle the erratic flames from the air and on the ground. This is ABC News.